The Last Command, part of the Starman series, www.starmanseries.com. Copyright 2005 by David Bauman, John Cooper, and Mike Dodd. Chapter 7, Several Kinds of Journeys. Alan Foster and his son passed through a doorway, traversed a short corridor, and entered an enormous chamber. They paced along a catwalk, the echoes of their steps reaching a long distance. Far above them was a bright yellow-orange sky with the sun in the late morning, looking noticeably smaller than the one they were used to. To their left was an extensive mirror-smooth lake that reflected the sky in unutterable beauty. In the lake, trees grew in profusion. It appeared to be an orchard in flood time, but it was apparent that the trees grew best in a watery environment. The trees were clad with heavy, thick, almost circular leaves, among which were globes of plum-colored fruit in abundance. On the shore were numerous small boats for skimming and a few large ones for working in the orchard. Here and there among the trees were teams of Amanians harvesting the fruit. "How's this one?" asked Alan, indicating a small boat that was no different from any other of its size. "Sure, Dad, it's fine," said Zip. They stepped into the boat. Once seated, Zip pressed a button on the control panel and a silent, low-powered motor started up. The young Starman guided the boat with a control stick. Within a few minutes, they were gliding through the hydroponic orchard inside Olivanda, out of sight of anyone else. The sky and sun were artificial, the products of the Amanians' amazing mastery of light. Though the two men were enjoying one another's company, there was also some discomfort between them. Long periods went by without a word being spoken. Breaking a long silence, Zip spoke up. "I'm really glad to be able to show you this orchard, Dad." Alan nodded vigorously. "I remember when you told me about it years ago, but of course it's much better to be here in person." Pause. I'm glad I was able to come back into space, Zip. Are you feeling all right? That is, was the treatment completely successful? No problems?" "Nah," replied his father energetically, "I'm fine." After another long pause, Alan cleared his throat. He looked up into the trees. The shadows of the branches passed over his face as the little boat drifted along the lake. "I know I haven't been easy to live with, David. I don't know if I always knew it, but I know it now. I've been a pompous armchair spaceman. Being back in space again has, well, it's not as exciting as I thought it would be. I'm useless." Zip didn't know how to respond. What his father was saying was essentially true. He couldn't deny it, but he didn't know how to provide the comfort or reassurance he thought his father wanted, needed, was maybe even asking for. "It's been great having you on this trip, Dad," he said after a slight pause for thought. "On the other trips I took, I often thought about your expedition and wondered what you would do or think if you were with me." "Well," said Alan, averting his face and letting his right hand trail in the water, "I appreciate your saying that, but I don't fit in with your friends. And I don't want to. No, that wouldn't be right. I'm making friends of my own. The Amanians are wonderful people, and this ship, it's something. I'm learning a lot. I just feel like an antique sometimes." Zip smiled and looked at his father. "One thing I've learned in my 9 years as a Starman is that what makes a person great, a dependable partner or part of a team, is not so much what they know. That can always be learned. It's what's in the heart and what you do with it. What makes for greatness is inside you, Dad. It's always been there. It was there on the deep space expedition 30 years ago. People knew you had it or you wouldn't have been made the captain of the James Nathan. And that quality doesn't disappear if you can't go into space. Where do you think I got it? Alan's face crinkled. Thanks, son, he said huskily. Goodness, Dad, everybody seems to know that about you except maybe you. You led your teammates all the way from Titan back to the moon without losing anyone. And now the same kind of leadership just fell on me with the Starman team. Mark and Joe naturally looked to me to keep the team together and on track. I only hope I do it as well as you did. With those words, Zip had expended his reserve of emotional expressiveness. His speech had come out of him without effort or forethought, and now he didn't know what else to say. He felt uncomfortable. He turned his attention back to the boat and glided it into a patch of soft sunlight. When father and son spoke again long minutes later, it was about mundane things, but both felt better. A few days later, Zip, Mark, and Joe donned their newly improved spacesuits. For several hours, they moved around in the asteroid belt on the surface of asteroids and scooting across open spaces. They crawled over their ship. They performed acrobatics on large asteroids. Communications equipment, illuminators, atmosphere purifiers and recyclers, nutrition capsules and feeders, medical diagnostic and treatment capabilities were all tested several times in a variety of conditions. Then back aboard Tharsos, they performed many of the same exercises under 8 artificially duplicated environments, running the gamut of temperatures and atmospheres, liquid and gaseous conditions, and electrical fields. Finally, the temperature in the testing area was raised to 700 degrees. Careful watch was kept on all systems as the Starmen performed dozens of necessary tasks. After the suit successfully functioned at that temperature, all the other tests were run a second time. At the end of the third day, the tests were over. Man, said Joe as he removed his helmet and ran his hands through his hair, I know we had to be the ones to wear these suits, but these past 3 days were hard work. I'm glad they're over. Me too, agreed Mark, setting his helmet on one of the dressing tables in the storage area. Let's go get a good meal, said Zip. I'm ready for something delicious and very filling. Let's invite Stanafi, Sidervo, and Jogrin to join us. Pleera, too. And your dad? Added Joe. Sure, agreed Zip. And Catherine. Joe looked at Zip sideways to see if there were a hint of teasing in the suggestion. Zip didn't notice, being too busy removing his suit. Sure, Catherine, said Joe, as if he'd had to think about it for a few seconds. Why not? It was just 2 days later. The janitor looked no different from the few other times the Starmen had seen him, but this time they felt an air of dread about him. He had never let anyone approach him too closely before, but now they knew they must get very close to him indeed. He would take them somewhere that no sentient being other than the first races had ever been. From there he would transport them to the Chamber of Nexi and strange power beneath the surface of Luxa itself. The Starmen were heavily armed with the best weapons that Starlight Enterprise could provide. Each carried a rifle that could produce both an impressive electromagnetic pulse and a concussive charge, and a high-powered pistol that could be set to produce fan lasers as well as single beams. They also carried a few specialized grenades. They had bade farewell to the crew and most of their friends the night before. An attempt had been made to make the occasion into a festive party, but it had quickly dampened into light conversation with food barely picked at by anyone, and then too much silence. Finally, someone had asked Alan Foster to tell the story of his deep space expedition and the first encounter with the Titanians. It turned out to have been the very best thing to do. Attention was taken off the 3 uncomfortable Starmen, and all eyes were turned toward Alan. He told the story well and humbly, and he used the occasion to provide encouragement and instill hope to the gathering. "And finally," he said as he drew his words to a close, "I must say how very proud I am of my son and his friends. The time of my adventures is over, and such success and even fame as I have had has been most fulfilling to me. Now it is their turn. In everything to which they have turned their hands, they have succeeded. What they begin tomorrow will most likely be the crowning event in their lives as starmen. They, as we all have always done their very best. The task they take on tomorrow will prove to be their shining moment." The older starman had then raised his glass in a toast. The party ended on a note of triumph and appreciation for friendships and families. The eyes of both foster starmen had glistened as they looked at one another across the room. Now only a small group had gathered for the actual departure. Mark and Joe had spoken to their parents by real-time contact, each in the privacy of his quarters, and Sip had made contact with his mother and sister. He had received Christina Bethany's message and had been thrilled by its implications. She wanted to move back into the interplanetary system, even move near where his family lived. What would that mean to him? Although her message elated him, it also disturbed him. It was too much for him to think about in the day before his departure. He set it aside, determined to think about the issue again when he returned. Alan Foster had seen fit to say his final words to his son in private and was not present for the actual departure. Only Ismaka, Richard Starlight, Commander Lewis, and Pleera were with the starmen. "Good luck, starmen," said King Ismaka. He approached the three one at a time, laid his hands on their shoulders. His deep eyes looked into those of each of them, conveying courage and confidence. Commander Lewis shook hands firmly with each one. Richard Starlight similarly shook their hands. He was smiling, but that he could do so only with an effort was evident. He felt keenly that he might be looking at them for the last time. Finally, Pleera approached them. "Peace and wisdom to you," she said in a strong but quiet voice, "and success." Upon the lips of each, she conferred a kiss. "Well, nothing can top that," said Joe, breaking the over-solemnity of the moment. "I'm ready to go now." Genuine smiles spread across the faces of those few who were present for the departure. "On your word, janitor," said Ismaka. "I will release the wormhole shield for a few seconds." "You may do so at my signal," responded the Ancient One. "Release for only a second, and I will slip through the opening." The three starmen turned to face the janitor, his environmental suit made of finely meshed wafers like fish's mail, emanated incandescent gold and brilliant orange. The three starmen affixed their helmets to their own suits and drew close to the one who would transport them far from all the people and places that were dear to them. When they came close enough to touch him, they saw through the clear globe that contained his head a face that was smooth to the point of being almost featureless. The heat waves that radiated from him made the image a little unclear, as if they were seen through shallow water. Yellow eyes, rich and deep like topazes, gazed placidly upon the starmen. The janitor's head tilted slightly to one side as his expression moved from one to the other. His words appeared in their minds. "You are the ones who hold the key to the victory that is close at hand. Hold on to my arms and on to each other." He stretched out his arms. The fingers on his hands spread wide and welcoming. Joe on one side, Mark on the other, and Sip in the middle clasped the janitor and each other so that a foursome was formed into a tight circle. The heat waves intensified so that the starmen could no longer see anything around them. "We are ready." The janitor's words impressed themselves on Ismaka's mind. He gave the order to suspend the hypershield for 1 second. To the watchers, it appeared that the janitor and the three starmen simply vanished in a haze that grew around them and then dissipated. The space where they had been standing had become empty. King Ismaca gave the order for the warships of the Armada to cross hyperspace to Omega Centauri. In three waves, the human and Amanian spacecraft made the jump and took up prearranged positions. They englobed the Xenobot's hypershield, nearly 1.3 billion miles in diameter. Inside the shield was the great Taurus, whose existence threatened all of human Amanian civilization. At its center was the Xenobot's home planet. To the Xenobots, the armada ranged against them appeared to be 5 times the size that it was, for the Amanians had created holographic ships to swell their numbers. These ships would be able to fire lasers, for in the center of each was a robotic battle drone,